You're listening to KDNK's For Land's Sake. I'm Bill Kite, your host. And today we have Fred Potter with us. Welcome, Fred.
Thanks, Bill.
Closer.
It's actually Fred Porter.
Porter, that's right. I screw something up every time, and so this time it happened to be your name. So I apologize, Fred. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a retired engineer, and what did you engineer when you were working?
For most of my working life, that was efficiency measures for big commercial buildings, both new and existing. And that was for a company in Boulder called Noresco Sustainability Services. And we were a very small subsidiary of Carrier Air Conditioning. I also, on occasion, worked installing solar collectors and both photovoltaics and thermal way back in the day, and Steamboat Springs, and ended up in Colorado originally from New Jersey at CU and stayed in Boulder. Ended up in Carbondale because my wife's parents worked at CRMS in the 60s.
And, all right.
About 10 years ago, we came up here. I kept working in Boulder for a while and then retired.
Sustainability. What does sustainability mean to you, Fred?
It means it could go on forever.
All right. All right. That's one good way to look at it, for sure. So your background and your interest now, even that you're retired, is energy and how to transport it and how to store it and all that sort of thing, correct?
Yes. I've kept interested in that because there's so much going on in the field, whether it's heat pump improvements and heat pumps for heating, in solar photovoltaics, in wind turbines, and especially in energy storage systems these days that help integrate all that into the grid and allow us to orchestrate all these variable resources so they can be used at high reliability.
Heat pumps. I have tried to figure out the whole principle behind heat pumps and exactly how they help, because I've been at places where they have them, and I don't understand. So could you help me a little bit about that?
Yeah, some people get flabbergasted when you say a heat pump has 300% efficiency, or it provides three times the amount of heat as electricity that goes into it. I feel like the best way to visualize that is really it's a heat conveyor. It's not generating the heat itself. It takes the heat from outside, which may not feel hot. It takes energy from outside when it's cold and amplifies that, would be one term.
Okay.
And delivers it to the inside. And since it's just moving the conveyor, more heat gets moved on the conveyor than electricity goes in to move the wheels inside.
Can it also keep things cool, though? How does that work?
Yeah, it's reversible. In Australia, they call a heat pump a reverse air conditioner.
Okay. There you go. All right. So heat pump, if people install them, is the cost going to be great, or what? I mean, is that going to save energy and save money, I guess, is the question.
It saves gas and then uses electricity, about a third of the quantity. And depending on the relative rates of those, it will usually save money, but it's typically not a huge amount around here. The most very, very efficient heat pumps that are coupled to a loop in the ground instead of the outside air will be a little more efficient and save more money, but they cost more to install. And that's the kind of system that's being used at Third Street that we hope will be installed at Third Street Center next few years.
Which is the kind that goes into the ground, is that it?
Yes.
Is that geothermal? Is that what we're talking about?
We call it geothermal, but that's I call it ground loop.
Okay.
It's not actually hot water that comes out of the ground. It's medium temperature, 50-degree water, but that allows more efficiency than trying to heat from 0-degree outside air.
Right. Okay, gotcha. So that's going to go in Third Street Center then fairly soon, huh?
Well, it depends on some financing and grants.
There you go.
I'm not going to speculate on when or how much will happen.
Yeah, absolutely. As a executive director of a nonprofit, grants is how you bring in money. So that's how the game works. So, well, let's hope that gets done. That sounds really interesting to me. So basically, in people's homes, we get our electricity either from gas or we get our heating and our cooling, that sort of thing, from either electricity or gas. Is that correct?
Yeah, almost all of us get our heat from gas here, whether it's through a furnace or a boiler.
And that's not not going to go away anytime soon, is it?
It's not happening very quickly. We've all, according to people who've been into a lot of buildings around here, a lot of us have insulated our buildings or put better windows in. Some people put better furnaces in, but the furnace or boiler is still burning gas and emitting, carbon dioxide and leaking a little methane, and those are greenhouse gases, and we need to move on from there. So the heat pump can replace the fossil fuel, and it's not like falling off a log in most cases to put them in, but people are getting more experienced, and the cost of installation is coming down slowly. The equipment gets better all the time.
Here where we are in the valley, we don't have a lot of wind energy being generated, do we?
No. We may have one or two tiny wind turbines on some farmsteads up in Missouri Heights. The general wind speeds are very low. In downtown Carbondale, the wind speeds are extremely low on an annual basis.
Right.
And then if you get up to ridge tops, there's turbulence and it's hard to access. Our terrain is so steep around here compared to where wind turbines are typically installed.
Right. And that goes for solar too, doesn't it? Having a solar farm, that's the land is pretty valuable for other things as well. So, but people are putting them on their roofs, and is that a good thing to do for now? I mean,
absolutely. I have solar on my roof, about 7 kilowatts.
Tell us a little bit about that, because I know there used to be some rebates or money that you could use for solar. So what's your experience with that?
Yeah, there's a federal tax credit. 30% of what you pay the installer, you can get back on your taxes.
So how much you put, how many solar panels, and how does this work? Do you put it back into the electric company? Or?
It's 20, about 20 panels up there, and when a lot of the times during the day in the summer, I'm not using much electricity, and it just goes back into the grid and feeds my neighbors, essentially. It only goes into the distribution grid. Most of my neighbors don't have solar, so that can be soaked up pretty quickly. And then at night, we're getting energy from the same place that everybody else is. In Colorado, that's about 40% wind and solar, a little bit of hydro. So that's increasing all the time, that percentage of clean energy in the backup power.
And where's that clean energy coming from?
Most of it is coming from the Eastern Plains.
Okay. So what about storage? I mean, if we're going to have alternative ways of using energy. How is it stored?
You know, currently, there's two ways electricity is being stored in Colorado, and that's either with what's called pumped hydro, where some water is pumped uphill when there's excess cheap electricity being generated and then allowed to flow downhill through a turbine. There's sort of two separate ponds. One of them's not really a pond. One system's over at Twin Lakes, and there's the feeder reservoir and then the main reservoir, which was not complete, is mostly intended to store water for the Arkansas River project, but is used also for that. And then those are very big projects to build with tunneling and building small reservoirs. So most of the new energy storage is coming from battery systems. Usually they come in a container, a shipping container, pre-assembled, and those are just being dropped in and added to the grid as more wind and solar. They work particularly well with solar because that cycles each day, and there's often some excess solar from noon to 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and then as the sun sets, there's demand to bring that to use that later on.
You said Twin Lakes. Does that go to the Front Range, and then we buy it from the Front Range? Is that how that works?
You know, that's just dispatched by the Bureau of Reclamation, and it just depends on how the whole grid is functioning. Xcel has a system above Georgetown, and it's looped into the transmission lines that come over the mountains here, and same with the one in at Twin Lakes.
So what are some of our opportunities that you see in energy use here in the future, the near future and the far future, if you want to go that far?
Well, I think we're going to get in Colorado a few thousand more wind turbines. That's at least the plan of Xcel and the Platte River Power Authority and Tri-State. Right now, all those wind turbines are concentrated in 2 or 3 spots on the Eastern Plains, and Xcel is building some new power lines to the far southeastern corner where there's a lot of wind, and the landowners there are really just either marginal dry land farmers or have irrigated land that's often having the water, I don't want to say taken away, but they're not able to use as much water as they thought over the last 40 years. That was not sustainable. So they're actually, most of them, I think, fairly enthusiastic about getting wind turbines. A wind turbine these days will usually pay a farmer upwards of $20,000 a year per turbine for the use of their land, and you can still graze and plow around the base of a turbine.
Right. Now, back to solar farms. You said the biggest solar farm close by is outside Delta, and that these solar farms, you can actually graze cattle or sheep underneath them and do irrigate underneath them and all that sort of thing. But tell us a little bit about that solar farm outside Delta, if you would.
Yeah, it's just under construction now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not complete. I believe it will be the largest one on the West Slope when it's the largest one under construction on the West Slope and larger than anyone that's been built so far. A lot of our solar farms are kind of small around here because we have to wedge them into small patches of underutilized land and flat land, which is just not that commonplace around here.
Or that economically feasible, probably,
yeah.
Too.
So the one in Delta, it's the Delta Montrose Electric association will be the recipient of the power. They contract with a developer to put it all together for them. They get a fixed price. They get a price, contract price, and those guys are out working the land. And first thing they're doing is modifying the irrigation that was there. I think the land was used to run some cattle. It's not particularly beautiful, streamside land or anything. They get some land from the some water from the Gunnison, but they're developing a drip irrigation system, and this will probably be one of the first solar farms in the country to be irrigated. In the Midwest, there are lots of solar farms that graze sheep underneath, but they don't need irrigation in most of those places.
Right.
In California, there's lots of solar farms on fallowed land, and they're not, they're just trying to keep the weeds down underneath those. So the Delta one, it's going to be with 80 megawatts. It's about a whole section, close to a square mile.
Oh, wow. That's big.
Yeah. Yeah. So this stuff's impressive. If someone wants to see a solar farm under construction right now that's further along, there's one up Parachute Creek about not even a mile. It's really definitely what you would call a brownfield location between the soda ash plant and the gas processing facility up there. The guys are doing what they call throwing glass right now, which means the racking is up, and they just load up a trailer behind a pickup truck, drive between the rows, and a couple guys pick up the panel and bolt it into the rack.
All right. Yeah, that would be interesting to look at least, I think.
It would be nice if somewhere there's probably some time-lapse videos of how these things go together. It's very modular. Those people see some of the systems around here, and they often have concrete bases, but the mass-produced larger ones, they just sort of pile-drive these posts into the ground and then mount from those. It's kind of like a big T-post.
Okay.
And a mechanized driver. You're not some guy sitting there
right.
pounding on it.
Right. So you've visited in one of the Ute tribes, a facility, didn't you? Could you tell us about
right.
that?
Right. I've just kind of took it upon myself to visit some sites further afield where there are bigger solar farms proposed or some controversy about them. The biggest one that's proposed right now on the western slope is right down towards Fort Corners, which is on the Ute Mountain Ute reservation.
Right.
They have not broken ground on anything. I talked to the folks there. They were engaged in some negotiations with the Navajo tribe about rights of way for transmission and some things that need to be cleared up, but I believe those were resolved during sometime in October, and they're hiring people to get to work on this thing right now. It's going to be 7 square miles.
Oh, wow.
There have been more than one case of solar farms proposed where tribal advocates or activists were upset because there were what you would call cultural resources of varying kinds within the boundaries that hadn't been considered. But the Ute tribe has, worked on the hired these developers themselves and worked closely with them to avoid places they held sacred.
Right.
A lot of times on these larger solar farms, the panel arrays will be separated with corridors for wildlife to move through.
Oh, good.
Right now, the way these things are built, generally, you're trying to keep large wildlife out, deer and elk. The panels are not really designed for being bumped into a lot.
Right.
Elk rutting and things like that. But small wildlife usually carries on, foxes and rodents and snakes.
You're listening to KDNK's public affairs program for Land Sake, and today our guest is Fred Porter. And we're talking about energy, how it relates to the land and developments that are occurring at the time. What else would you like to talk about, Fred?
Yeah, I guess some of the objections to solar and wind and energy storage batteries have been around the materials that go into them and the amount of energy that's needed for those. The energy part is really pretty amazing these days. The solar panels and the mounting systems and everything else will generally pay back the energy that went into it in a year or less.
Oh, wow.
In this climate. If you put a panel out in the shade, that won't be the same thing. But
right. Out
in these big solar farms, they're designed to catch the sun all day long, and you're in the four corners and are up here, you still got lots of sun. Wind turbines, about the same. So that part is kind of amazing how fast the energy is paid back. Now, it all requires steel for the racks or glass for the panels. Some of this, there are rare earth magnets in wind turbines and small amounts of various rare elements in solar panels. But some of it is very, very small compared to the overall size. And as the industry has evolved and these things have been out in the field and some of them are being replaced, there's a lot of work. There is recycling of many of the components.
I was going to ask you about that. Good, yeah.
Some of them have been very difficult to recycle. I think the rare earth magnets, just because if you're trying to grind something up in a steel vat and it's all very magnetic, I think it's quite a job. There's some people getting money to try to do that now because these materials are very expensive. There have been problems with lithium battery fires, but those have been evolving. I listened to one of the members of the National Task Force who'd been a fire captain in New York City, and he's dealt with fires from these little these charging systems for e-bikes that have been a problem in the city, and then worked on improving the bigger containerized battery systems. And he compares what's going on to the era of the Model T Ford.
Okay.
And that, if you got T-boned in that old Model T Ford, you were probably toast. But now we have a Volvo that you could probably roll off a cliff and you'll walk away fine. There's flammable materials in them. The way they deal with the big battery fires is if a container catches on fire, which is becoming less and less and less common, it's just allowed to burn out on its own.
Okay.
Huh. And
because if you put water, you're making it worse, correct?
You do make it worse, and that's even the case with car battery fires. The best solution is to just let it burn out. And as he said, you don't want to stand next to anything that's burning, as far as toxics.
Right.
In our homes, we've got PVC piping and polyurethane insulation and foam cushions and all that stuff. That anything that catches on fire these days is a kind of a toxic mess.
Right. Yeah. So, You know, the wind turbines, now, they don't last as long as solar panels, do they?
No. But they're often, they are being repowered, which can entail putting up a whole new tower and blades and the turbine itself, the nacelle, or in some cases just the replacing the turbine on top of the tower with the blades. And when the towers are taken down, all that steel is recycled. That's just like very heavy, valuable scrap.
Right.
The blades have been a problem, but someone pointed out that in our coal power plants, there's coal ash that needs to be landfilled all the time, and no one really talks about how much of that.
That's true, isn't it?
Goes in. And most of the blades will probably start being recycled in a few years. There's some of them that were stockpiled. There were some companies that kind of scammed the idea and told manufacturers or utilities that they would be recycling their blades and then stockpiled them and kind of walked away.
Oh, well, the whole recycle industry has fed us really a story that's not true, so I can understand that. Well, listen, Fred, it's been a real pleasure to have you here today, and I've learned a lot, and I hope our listeners have. Next time will be in December, second Monday in December at 4:30. We're going to try to have Eagle County Commissioner Kathy Chandler Henry with us. She's retiring soon, so let's hope that you tune in next time as well.